Okay, I'm Charles Hodges. I'm a family physician. I usually am on time. I've been married 39 years. I have 4 children, 10 grandchildren. I graduated from the Indiana University School of Medicine in 1975. I'm board certified in family medicine and geriatrics. I graduated from seminary at Liberty Baptist Theological Seminary in 2002. I suppose I get to do this lecture on medical illness because I am a practicing physician. You know, that really isn't too much of a qualification to help people who are in the middle of pain and suffering, except it has given me a lot of opportunity to observe people as they become ill, suffer pain, recover their health, or die. And I can tell you this, that nothing in medical school prepared me for the first day that I would tell a young mother that the heart disease that she had was not curable and that she would die. And she did. At the age of 26, I didn't have the foggiest idea how to help her or what to say or how to say it. And I thought it would get easier as I grew older and became more experienced in the profession. And what I found is that it actually got harder. And the reason why it got harder is because I knew them. And honestly, I liked most of them. What I found out was that I could not insulate myself from the suffering of my patients. And in that sense, I know it is true that we are made in God's image. If you really want to know how to help people who are facing medical illness, then I urge you to skip medical school and go to the Bible. The writer of Hebrews tells us that we have not a high priest who cannot be touched by the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted, like we are, yet without sin. So for a moment, let's look at how the Lord dealt with illness from John chapter 11. It's a familiar story, isn't it? It's because of the ending. It answers most of the important questions that we're going to face in helping people who are ill. Verse 1 says, "Now there was a certain man named Lazarus, not just any man. He was a certain man. He was certain because he was friends with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Jesus stayed in their house. Mary was the one who will anoint his feet with her fragrant ointment and will wipe his feet dry with her hair. The sisters in verse 3 have sent word, 'Lord, the one you love is sick.'" Jesus' response is strange. And in verse 4, he says, "Well, this sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified by it." That's really well worded when you think about it. The disciples missed the point, and so did most of us when we read it the first time. But the strangeness, it grows, because Jesus in verse 6 just stays put for 2 more days. And then, after 2 days, he announces that it's time to go and to wake Lazarus from sleep. Now, his disciples weren't too keen on making the trip because the Jews wanted to kill him, and they wanted to kill them too. And then Jesus says the most remarkable statement I know of in Scripture regarding illness. "Lazarus is dead, and I am glad." Think about that. How would you like to preach a funeral like that? Yes. Your body's right down there, family right over here, and you say, "Fred is dead, and I am glad." You'd be lucky to make it out of the funeral home or the church in one piece, wouldn't you? It's sort of bizarre, unless, of course, you have to read the rest of the sentence. "I am glad for your sakes that you might believe. My friend is dead. His sisters suffer. But you and a bunch of other people are going to believe." So Jesus knows, doesn't he? Jesus has a plan, which in the long run is going to be better than the one that Martha, Mary, or Lazarus had. But then, did Jesus care? Did Jesus care? That's important to us because we're going to change the tense on that verb, aren't we? And we're going to ask, does Jesus care? Off they go. Takes 2 days for them to get there. Martha will attest to this in verse 39. And we see the awkwardness of the why question. think about it for a moment and enter into the suffering of Lazarus and Martha and Mary. It was probably 5 or 6 days ago. I suspect the messenger was paid to run, not to walk carefully, and it probably didn't take him 2 days to get there. The message was urgent, and every day Jesus' trio of friends looked out the front door towards the horizon, and they were looking to see the outline of Jesus walking their way. Eventually, it was just Martha and Mary because Lazarus was dying, and eventually it was only Mary. You can feel the hope leak out by the second, can't you? Then Lazarus dies, and hope is nearly as dead as Lazarus. And then in verse 20, word comes to Martha that Jesus is here and coming, and she, being the practical one, runs on a mission. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Those are hard words, aren't they? Hard to say, harder even to hear. Lord, where were you when we needed you? That's a question that you will hear if you talk to people long enough who are sick. But Martha was still on a mission, and she really didn't need to know why. She just wanted to know if Jesus would help. And so she keeps right on talking. Even now, as dead as he is, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give it to you. So in verse 23, Jesus says, your brother will rise again. And Martha completely misses it. She says, I don't know he'll rise again on the last day. And Jesus looks at her and says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Then Jesus asks her the question that it all hinges on. Do you believe me? I wonder how long it hung in the air. Jesus tells her he has a plan for Lazarus, and the truth is that plan is better than the one that she had sent the messenger off for. Yes, here, quickly, Jesus, heal my brother while he's still alive. That was her plan. And then Martha responds, yes, Lord, I believe. And she goes in to tell Mary that the Lord is here. Same scene, second verse. Mary runs out, says the same sentence. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And she falls at his feet weeping. And here we see the answer. Does God care? Does Jesus care? If he cared, why would he let a good man like this die? That's what the folks who were standing around saying. And Jesus looks at Mary and the family, and Jesus weeps. Oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is touched by my grief. So Jesus knew. Jesus had a plan, and it would be a better plan than Martha's. It would result in people believing and God being glorified. Jesus cared deeply about the losses that Mary and Martha and Lazarus suffered, but it didn't stop there. It didn't stop with Jesus knowing or Jesus caring. When Jesus had wept enough, he told them what to do. Yeah, it's time to stand up here and do something. Remove the stone. Martha objects. It's been 4 days. He's entirely dead. Martha has given up. She has submitted her will to what she thought Jesus' plan was. Leave Lazarus in the tomb until the second coming. But that was not the plan. Didn't I tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Jesus is telling her, I have a better plan. And then he prays. Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you will always hear me, but because of the people standing around, I said it so that they may believe that you sent me. And when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth! And he did. So Jesus knew, he cared, he had a plan that was different from Martha and Mary and Lazarus's plan. He wept, he prayed, and then he acted. That, folks, is the pattern for helping people who are ill. What was the difference? If Martha had gotten her way, all she would have had was a healthy brother. Instead, she saw the glory of God in action, and many people believed as a result. At your own convenience, read John chapter 12, and you'll find out that so many of the Jews believed in Jesus as a result of Lazarus' resurrection.